A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. I am glad you're with me on the program today. We are going to be talking with Doug Hamblin, the new Executive Vice President of the National Rifle Association. We're going to get to that interview in just a minute. I will tell you that as we were actually talking with Doug, news came down out of Delaware that Hunter Biden found guilty on all three felony gun charges, charged with three counts, tied to possession of a firearm while an unlawful user of drugs, lying about his status on the Form 4473. Judge Mary Ellen Noriega has not set a date for sentencing. Biden will, Biden will likely remain free until the sentencing comes down, and there is the possibility of prison time for Hunter Biden. These charges carry a potential 25-year prison sentence. I don't think that's in the cards for Hunter Biden, but a range of, say, 46 to 48 months in prison, I don't think is out of the question. You know, you look at one of these cases that the Supreme Court has been holding on to for a number of months, U.S. versus Daniels, Patrick Darnell Daniels, arrested in Mississippi. Had marijuana and firearms in his vehicle. He told officers that he smoked marijuana or used marijuana about 14 days a month. He got 46 years in federal prison. So, I think that that guideline would certainly be on the table for Hunter Biden, who has now been convicted of possessing firearms as an unlawful user of crack cocaine. But the other interesting aspect of this is now that Hunter Biden's been convicted, his defense can raise a Second Amendment argument on appeal. Judge Mary Ellen Noriega and the Third Circuit Court of Appeals both told Biden's attorney, Abby Lowell, that he could not raise a constitutional challenge to the underlying statutes that Biden was charged with violating at trial. That was something that could be raised only on appeal after either a guilty verdict or a guilty plea. Well, now that the verdict has come down, Hunter Biden can make that Second Amendment argument and is likely to do so as the case moves forward. In fact, I suspect that Biden is, even if he is sentenced, he will probably not be ordered to prison until after his appeals have been exhausted. That is certainly a possibility anyway. So I know that there's been a lot of talk. You know, Joe Biden says he's not going to pardon his son. I don't think Joe Biden needs to worry about that before the election. And after the election, if he wins, he's a lame duck. Right. If he loses, he's even more of a lame duck and he can do whatever he wants on his way out the door. So I don't hold any stock in Biden saying that he's not going to pardon his son. He's not going to do anything. He's going to let the justice system proceed. I think that that statement comes with an expiration date of Wednesday, November the 6th, the day after Election Day. I think is when that statement becomes null and void. Anyway, we're going to have much more coverage on the Hunter Biden guilty verdict at BearingArms.com. But now let's turn our attention to today's interview with Doug Hamblin, the new Executive Vice President of the National Rifle Association. I don't know if this is the first on-camera interview that Doug has done since being named to the position, but certainly one of the first, and I'm glad that he was able to carve out a few minutes to speak with us about the future of the organization, where things stand right now, and again, what is this path forward for the NRA rebuilding its trust with the members and rebuilding its strength as an organization. Take a look and a listen. Doug, thank you so much for coming on the program, sir. It is good to see you today.
Thanks, Cam. Pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you know, first of all, I think the fact that you're doing this is a sign to me anyway that this is sort of a new day for the NRA. It's been a long time since the executive vice president has made the rounds of the media. I know you've been talking with folks like Jim Shepherd and Tom Gresham, so I'm glad to have you here. My first question for you is, what made you take this job, Doug? The NRA is obviously in a very challenging position right now, in a challenging environment. What made you decide that this was something you wanted to take on?
It took some time for me to throw my hat in the ring. It was a difficult decision. It's a sacrifice to do this. But I talked it over with family and I prayed on it. And once I made the decision that I was going to do it, I'm 110% committed to it. And I think I get to work with some tremendous people. The staff at the NRA Publications Division, where I've been the executive director for the last 10 years, they're the best folks I've ever worked with. And I've been a publisher for well over 35 years. And so the word I'll use is continuity. With all the turmoil that's taken place here in the last 5-6 years, the staff here deserves solid leadership. They deserve a leader who understands the business that we're in. They need somebody who has a solid working relationship with every one of the divisions within the National Rifle Association, because it's a complex place with a unique culture. And so I felt, with everything that was on the line, you've got an election year coming up, I figured it was time for me to make a commitment and give it my best shot, do the best I can for the NRA, for the members, for the staff, for the donors, and for the industry.
Do you see yourself as a transitional figure, Doug, or do you plan on sticking around for, you know, quote unquote, the long term?
Well, that's not for me to decide, Cam. The EVP is a position that's elected, and I get a 1-year term. And so 11 months from now, less than 11 months, just over 11 months from now, I should say, I'll be judged on the merits of the work that I've done. And so I've said to myself, nobody's going to outwork me. And I've had a lot of great meetings, a lot of creative stuff that's in the pipeline, things that you're going to be seeing quickly. But to answer your question directly, I'm not viewing this as a 1-year, 2-year, 3-year. I'm just taking it 1 year at a time, because that's really what this election has yielded. It's given me a 1-year term.
What to you, I mean, now that you've been in this position for a few weeks, I don't know if you've had the chance to settle in necessarily, but you've been on the job for a few weeks. In your mind, what is the first priority that you need to address as EVP?
Well, I think a lot of it was achieved in the board meeting on May 20th, the day that I was elected. And that was that this would be a more transparent organization. And you said at the top of this interview that there had been not a lot of media interviews done coming out of headquarters here at NRA. But what started that meeting was a motion from the floor to have the elections open to the public. And so that was a tangible sign, and it passed. You know, there was a paper vote, and it passed. And so again, we are a transparent organization. And I think the other part of it right now is we elected a chief compliance officer, a guy by the name of Bob Mensinger. And so Bob is now on board, does not report to me. He reports to the board. And so we're trying to send signals to our basic constituencies, starting with the membership, that we are going to be good stewards of their membership dues. We are going to manage this place with discipline and fiscal responsibility. And we're going to grow the membership. And we're going to be a bigger, stronger, better NRA next year than we are this year. And we're moving very quickly to do that.
Are you seeing any signs that members are coming back, that donors are coming back as a result of what happened at the annual meetings?
Still a little bit early, but I'm glad to share with you that our membership revenue in the month of May exceeded goal for the first time in years. So we had a 10-day window from May 20th to June 1st, if you will. And during that time, I'm not saying that was the reason for it, but I'm not going to dissuade that either. I think that we've hit bottom. I really believe that. And I think that, and I've said this in some other interviews, the folks like yourself who have a vested interest in a strong National Rifle Association, and I'm talking about some big names in our industry, and they've known me and I've known them for a long time, and we've communicated, and to a person, they all want to support us. They all want to come back. They all recognize the importance of the National Rifle Association. They love the organization.
You know, I mean, listen, I never worked directly for the NRA, but I was on NRA News and NRA TV from 2004 to 2019. And, you know, you talk about the strength of the organization being its members, but you also talked about the employees. And I got to say, that was one of the greatest gifts that I received in working for NRA TV and working for NRA News, was getting a chance to, you know, meet some of the staffers and to get to know some of the staffers, whether it's, you know, the folks in NRA ILA Public Affairs or the folks in General Operations, the, you know, Phil Schreier and Jim Sapieha at the Firearms Museum, the Disabled Shooting Sports Program. I mean, there have been some, you know, there are some incredible programs that the NRA has put on over the years, and there are some incredible people who are so dedicated to the mission of the NRA that, you know, I am glad to see that somebody with that organizational experience, that firsthand experience with the staff, is now in your position, that you know, you have that background. And, you know, you're right. I think that the Second Amendment community is clearly better off with a strong NRA. And providing that transparency and accountability is a huge component of regaining the trust of those members who have either stopped giving money or they've let their membership lapse. To that end, let me ask you a question, Doug. Who is setting policy for the NRA today? Is it you? Is it Randy Kozik over at ILA? Who decides where the NRA is going to come down on any particular issue at this point in time?
Well, as the CEO, those big decisions rest in my hands. But we work very closely with ILA. And coming from the publication side of the business, we covered ILA and publications division through America's First Freedom magazine, would coordinate with ILA some of the feature content and some of the major issues. We cover everything, whether it's the Supreme Court cases or other state or local issues. But in terms of the direction of the organization, I work very carefully with the executive director of advancement and ILA and membership and general operations, and obviously publications as well. So I'm a consensus builder, so I don't view myself as a dictator in any way, shape, or form. People that know me, they know that I'm open to suggestion, and I welcome opinions and diversity of opinion. But when it comes time to make a decision, I'm not afraid to step up and call the shots. I've been doing it my entire career, and I'm comfortable doing that.
So to that end, I mean, you talk about consensus. I'm curious, you know, the NRA is, I think, the biggest Second Amendment organization, the biggest civil rights organization when it comes to the right to keep and bear arms. And this is, I've talked about the Second Amendment community as the last big tent political movement in this country. Yes, most gun owners are conservative, probably most NRA members are conservative, but, you know, the right to keep and bear arms exists for all of us. You don't have to look like me, think like me, vote like me. Do you want the NRA to represent every gun owner? Do you want every gun owner to feel welcome within the NRA? Or is the NRA a conservative organization that defends the Second Amendment? How do you see the organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. We are a very diverse organization, and we want to welcome every diverse, every constituency, every law-abiding firearms owner into the family. We want those that we've lost to come back to the family. And I'll tell you a little anecdotal story. We had a board meeting when Mr. Jim Porter was our president in Birmingham, Alabama, and it was at the Civil Rights Museum. And I was a relatively new staffer, maybe a year, two, three during my time. And so that would have put us around 2015, 16. And we had Dr. Ben Carson was there, and we had a federal judge, a black woman who was a federal judge. And so she got up and made some remarks, and she talked about her father teaching her how to use a 45 semi-automatic handgun. She said because in the area that she grew up, it was rural. And she said the KKK would come bombing up and down those roads. And her father wanted her to be able to protect herself. That impacted me. It resonated with me. We've launched NRAwomen.com. That was a site that we launched in the spring of 2020. Ann Smith's the editorial director there and does a fantastic job. So we know how many first-time gun buyers have come into the market. I'm hearing well over 12 million over the last 5 years, but also 30% of that number being women. That's a pretty significant constituency. So my point being, we have a website that we've invested heavily in creating content by women for women. We also have a website called NRA Family. So you've got these entry-level folks that are trying to have serious conversations, whether it's a grandparent with a grandchild, whether it's a father with a daughter, father with a son. But if you go to NRAfamily.org, you'll see a website that's got all this entry-level information that welcomes people into the organization. And then they can graduate and become, whether it's law enforcement or military or competitive shooters or hunters. So in other words, we want everybody across all of those constituencies, and we have content, we have places for them to come to NRA and feel comfortable.
On the, so I think it's fantastic, again, on the cultural side, because we've seen this attempt to denormalize gun ownership, right, and to demonize gun ownership. This was something that I spoke about with David Yamane, who is a sociology professor at Wake Forest, actually was at the legal seminar and was at the annual meetings this year. And one of the points that David makes, and David is a liberal gun owner, he makes no bones about it, but you know, he talks about all of the tens of millions of gun owners every day who don't commit a problem, right? They don't commit a crime. They don't act irresponsibly with a firearm. We never hear about those folks because that's not newsworthy, right? People who do the right thing don't generally end up on the nightly news. But it is up to us, I think, to counter that media narrative about gun ownership being either a terrible idea as a parent, a terrible thing to do as an American, makes you a bad Christian, you can't call yourself a pro-lifer. I saw that op-ed earlier today. So there is, I think, that need to push back culturally, right? And not necessarily to, whether you like it or not, I think we are in a culture war. But I also look at the political side of this. You know, a decade ago, about one in four Democrats in Congress were A-rated by the NRA. I don't think there's a single one today. What is that concerning for you? And what can the NRA do to, I don't want to say depoliticize the issue, because that's not the right word, but to go out and recruit those pro-gun Democrats, to let Democrats know that, hey, you know what, it's not the kiss of death if you support the Second Amendment on the left.
Well, it's interesting that you put it that way. We know that a lot of our members are Democrats. I mean, Democrats are buying guns in big numbers too. One of the things that I've committed to, and I've spoken about it publicly, is I'm going to do more media, more mainstream media, and I'm going to just call it what it is, and that's the NRA members, we're the good guys. We're upstanding members of our communities. We're involved in local activities. We go to church. We have families. We're veterans. We're first responders. We're teachers. I mean, we represent a very large cross-section of our society. And when you go to an annual meeting like we just had in Dallas, where you had 72,000 plus people in attendance, and you see who the folks are walking those show floors across the various halls, you go, wait a minute, this is not what I anticipated. If you're someone coming from the outside for the first time, you've been there, Cam, you see it. So I agree with you, but we need to get out there and tell that story. And I'm gonna do my part to try to communicate that to the broader American public. And the other part of this is, I've seen studies that have been done, and John Lott's a great statistician. I know you know John, but he's put numbers out that say, firearms have been used 1.6 million times a year to save lives. You know, we don't talk about that enough as a deterrent. And when you're a small petite woman, or you're a elderly person like my mother, you may need a firearm to equalize a situation that can get out of hand real quickly because someone who's much bigger, stronger, and aggressive than you are is on offense. So I agree with you, Cam. We have to do a better job of communicating the positives of who NRA members are.
And again, you know, you're not going to get a lot of help from the mainstream media. You know that. But I'm glad to hear that you're willing to step into the arena and actually, you know, do some of these interviews that are, frankly, they're going to be hostile, right? But that is, unfortunately, still one of the best ways to get that message out is to square off against the anti-gun media and to bring your message directly to the American people. All right, Doug, I'm going to give you a curveball here because as you and I have been talking, the verdict came down in Hunter Biden's trial. He is found guilty of a line on the form 4473, lying about his status as an unlawful user of drugs. This is an issue that I don't know if it's necessarily divided the Second Amendment community, but you do have some groups say, listen, this law in question is unconstitutional under the Bruin test. Nobody should be prohibited from possessing a firearm simply because they, you know, smoke pot or they use drugs. You've got some folks who say, you know, I don't really like the law, but it should be applied equally to everybody, including Hunter Biden. Where is the NRA's position on this? And if Biden makes a Second Amendment argument on appeal, would the NRA go along with that argument? Where does the NRA stand on this particular statute?
Yeah, I think that if laws on the books were enforced more consistently, I think we'd have a much more peaceful and a safer world to live in. The truth of the matter is the 4473 asks about seven or eight questions. All of them are significant. The responses to each one of them does have a significant impact on whether or not that individual who's applying for that license to purchase should have the right to do so. And all I'll say in the Hunter situation is we know that people who are under the influence make bad decisions. And so if someone's being asked, are you addicted to non-prescription drugs, I'll just summarize it that way, and they falsify that information, they're a risk to society. And so I just say enforce the laws on the books and enforce them equally. And I think if we do that, I think the world that we live in will be a much better place.
Should this particular law be on the books, though? Because, I mean, think about this, Doug. Let me give you another perspective. My wife is a stage 4 lung cancer patient. She has undergone chemotherapy in the past. She's getting ready to start again, unfortunately, next month. I know. I mean, I've had people tell me, hey, you know what, with the nausea, with the, the lack of appetite, you know, she should just, you know, smoke a little pot. And I said, you can't. You know, I own guns. That's going to open myself up to all kinds of legal jeopardy. Because that's the way the current law writes, right? That's the way the current law is. So is this current law fair in your mind?
Well, I think prescription drugs for a medical situation, I'm very sorry about your wife. My wife's a breast cancer survivor. But if these are non-prescription drugs, that's a big difference. And crack cocaine's a little bit different than medical marijuana.
Fair. Not in the eyes of the ATF, though. It should be noted, right? Not right now.
Well, then that may be something that should be addressed. I'll give you that.
Okay. All right. Listen, we're running out of time here, and I know you're a very busy guy, so I do appreciate you carving out a few minutes. I guess maybe the most important question on the minds of a lot of NRA members or even former members is, how do I know that if I write a check for $25 or $50 or more, that money is going to be put to good use at the NRA, that it's not going to go towards private suits or, fancy suits or private jet rides or high-powered attorneys, quite frankly. What would you say to those members about knowing that they can, again, have some faith in this organization?
Great question. It's going to take us some time to prove it, but I'm here to tell you, I'm a very conservative business operator. I've been responsible for profit and loss in various businesses for well over 30 years now. I ran the publications division in a very tight-fisted way. We did very well as a standalone entity within the National Rifle Association. And I'm going to take those best practices and I'm going to roll them out across the NRA. And I'm meeting with all of the division directors and executive directors. They've heard that from me face-to-face. And with Bob Bensinger as our chief compliance officer and David Medrano, who's our auditor now, and these are folks that don't report to me, they have access to anything and everything we do in the building, we will not tolerate malfeasance. It's over. It's not going to happen.
That is very good to hear. Listen, I know that we've got the civil case in New York coming up next month. I would love to have you back after that is over. And that gives you a little bit more time again to kind of see how things are developing. But will you come back on the show?
Be my pleasure.
Well, listen, Doug, it has been a real pleasure talking with you again. Congratulations on the new position. I can't speak for every member of the audience, but I know that I was so deeply concerned about the future of this organization heading into the annual meetings. It tore me up that I couldn't be there in person. But as an NRA Benefactor Life member, I was really pleased to see the results. This seemed like the necessary first step to rebuild this organization, and it sounds like those additional steps are coming. So again, thank you so much for joining me on the program today. I won't proclaim to be, you know, non-biased or completely neutral on this position, because I do want to see the NRA succeed. I do want to see the NRA thrive. And it sounds like you do too.
Cam, we're going to make it. The organization is much stronger than people believe it to be. If there's been $1 billion in anti-NRA media that's been shaped against us, and it's because we win. So just understand, we are going to make it, but we need folks like yourself to give us a chance. We want to welcome home those members we've lost, and we want new firearms owners. We want them to come to the NRA family as well. Thank you.
Doug Hamlin, Executive Vice President of the National Rifle Association. Thank you, sir, for joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My thanks to Doug for joining us on the program. By the way, there were no conditions for this interview set down by NRA beforehand. If you don't feel like I was hard enough on Doug Hamlin, well, that's on me. If you think I was too hard on Doug Hamlin, I guess that's on me as well. But I do appreciate Doug Hamlin sitting down and talking with us, again, without any preconditions or anything of that nature. That alone, I think, is a real sign of the effort to increase transparency and accountability within the NRA. And I think that is a very, very positive development. So hopefully we'll have a Doug back on the program here before long. All right, let's turn our attention now. Actually, before we turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. The very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred: free speech. It is the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many folks feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. That's where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Now, they do seek out financial experts. These are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report that highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free. Just text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with the story out of CWB Chicago, which reports a parolee slashed and stabbed a sleeping man on the Green Line of the Chicago Transit Authority. The gun-free Chicago Transit Authority, the weapons-free Chicago Transit Authority, supposedly, right? You're not allowed to bring your firearm with you. Even if you're a concealed carry holder, you're not supposed to be bringing knives or any other weapons either. But, you know, the criminals in Chicago regularly ignore those prohibitions. 42-year-old Ivan Weldon is accused of attacking, at least three individuals on the Chicago Transit train line. Documents indicate that he was on parole for robbing a Loop convenience store at the time, according to CWB Chicago. All of the alleged attacks occurred on the evening of May 31st. In one case, Weldon is accused of using a box cutter to stab and slice the neck of a 48-year-old man who was sleeping on a Green Line train. Victim received about 30 stitches from his ear to his neck, suffered ligament damage that prevents him from effectively using his right hand. He then went on to allegedly attack two men at the 35th Bronzeville ITT Green Line station, punching one man in the mouth in the station vestibule, grabbing the other man by his backpack, then throwing him down to the station platform, and then allegedly kicking the man in his face when he was down on the ground. Again, all these allegations, according to prosecutors. The judge in this case, Shauna Bolliker, detained Weldon, calling him a threat to public safety. He has been charged with attempted first-degree murder, seven counts of aggravated battery, as well as misdemeanor theft for turnstile jumping. State officials are also renewing his parole status in light of the new allegations, according to CWB Chicago. It was just back in March that Weldon was sentenced to 3 years after he pleaded guilty to robbing a 7-Eleven back in December of 2020. Prosecutor said he warned the store clerk to, quote, back off, I have a gun, as he took tobacco, alcohol, and food items. He was arrested at a CTA station shortly after the robbery. According to the Illinois Department of Corrections, Weldon arrived at the Stateville Correctional Center the day after his sentence. Remember, 3-year sentence handed down in March of this year. But he left the same day, the very same day he got to prison, after having his sentence reduced thanks to good behavior and credits earned before sentencing. By the way, when that 2020 robbery occurred, CWB Chicago reports that Weldon was on parole for attacking a CTA supervisor, which happened at the Adams Wabash station. So there you go, a guy who can't stay out of trouble and apparently can't stay in prison because that 3-year sentence that was handed down in March ended up being less than a day in the state penitentiary there in Illinois. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from Kentucky, where the Kentucky State Police say they believe a fatal shooting on Saturday was an act of self-defense involving a road rage encounter. I got to say, these stories are so depressing to me. I am so grateful that this individual was able to protect themselves, but for God's sakes. Granted, listen, I live in rural Virginia. I don't have to worry about Northern Virginia traffic anymore. The last time I went up to Northern Virginia, it was for my friend Cameron Gray's memorial service. And I remember just how infuriating it was when I sat in traffic for more than an hour to go less than 5 miles. I get it. That is infuriating. I have to deal maybe with an Amish buggy. You know, I slow down for a minute or two. Maybe I get stuck behind a tractor. But for the most part, I don't generally have to deal with the type of traffic and nonsense that folks who live in big cities do. Having said that, even when you are stuck in gridlock, even when somebody in front of you is acting like an ass, as soon as you get out of that car, as soon as you get to your destination, you forget about it, right? Maybe if somebody is just a complete jerk, you sit on it, you stew on it, you tell your spouse at the end of the day, you never believe this jackhole I ran into on the road today. But that's, I think, pretty few and far between, right? Most of the time, no matter how angry we get when we're behind the wheel, it dissipates. It disappears when we get to our destination. So I always try to keep that in mind. Like, this will not matter in an hour. This will not matter in 15 minutes. It's not worth getting upset. It's not worth getting angry about. I wish that more people had that attitude. Unfortunately, not everybody does. And that's why you get cases like this. It was back on June the 8th, just after 7 p.m., Kentucky police got a request to assist in a road rage incident. During the initial investigation, they determined that two cars were driving on Interstate 71. They got off at exit 43. At that time, one of the drivers was already on the phone to dispatchers in Carroll County, Kentucky, reporting that the other driver was displaying a firearm. As the two cars were then traveling after they got off the interstate, police say the incident escalated and shots were fired. One driver, identified as 63-year-old Daniel Schaus of Carrollton, Kentucky, hit by the gunfire, died from his injuries. Kentucky State Trooper Chad Johnson says the second vehicle passed the first vehicle, at which time we believe the second vehicle brandished a firearm. Basically, they say they said that Schaus had a gun and they are treating the shooting as a case of self-defense. Johnson said the man who shot Schaus remained at the scene, saying that he was there when law enforcement got there. Law enforcement has been able to interview him and talk to him. He's been cooperative the entire time. So we don't know all of the details, but based on what prosecutors or what the state police are saying, it appears that Mr. Schaus was apparently the initial aggressor. When he tried to pass that second vehicle, displayed a firearm. The driver of that second vehicle, fearing for his life, pulled his own firearm, shot and killed Schaus. We'll keep our eyes open for any further details. But again, as glad as I am that this individual is able to protect himself, what a stupid and needless confrontation. You know, you're driving down the interstate. Somebody does something you think is completely egregious. When they hit that exit ramp, you just keep driving. Your problem is over, right? That guy is gone from your life forever. never have to deal with that individual again. You don't need to follow them. You certainly don't need to show how angry you are at their actions. That again, is aggression. That is escalation. That puts you in the wrong. And that individual, who you are now acting aggressively towards, has a right to protect themselves. This would have been so much better for everybody involved if Mr. Strauss had simply continued on to his destination, let that driver alone. All right. On to today's good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A dentist at a restaurant in Port Orange, Florida, who is able to, I guess a dentist is used to working with getting stuff out of people's mouths, but this, I guess, more the throat, and did not use a little pick, and a little water pick, or prescribe any laughing gas. No, it was the Heimlich maneuver that saved the day. Patrick Cole was at the First Watch restaurant. A little bit of food got stuck in his throat. He tried to clear it on his own. Couldn't get it dislodged. So he stood up and he's looking around for help. Sean Bannon, who is a dentist there in the area, sitting a few tables away, noticed that Cole was distressed. And he said, as soon as he put his hands to his throat, it was like a knee-jerk reflex. I was on my feet. So he went behind Cole, started performing the Heimlich maneuver. Able to get the food out of the throat, allow him to breathe again. He said it was a joyous noise when I heard him breathe air back into his lungs. Cole took a couple of minutes to collect himself and then sat down, continued his meal. He said on Monday, talking with the Fox 35 in Orlando, how do you thank somebody that just helped save your life? You owe him because he helped you breathe another day. Sean Bannon says, tomorrow's not promised. So let's be kind. Let's show gratitude and have more love in our hearts. And he urges people to learn the Heimlich maneuver as well as CPR. Good advice for everybody. And again, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, Dr. Sean Bannon, who I'm guessing may have earned a new customer and a new patient that day, right? You want to show your gratitude? Well, how about giving your business to the dentist who saved your life going forward? Maybe. We'll see. But in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, Dr. Sean Bannon there in Port Orange, Florida. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, we probably will be discussing the Hunter Biden trial and maybe the verdict on Wednesday's Cam & Company, so tune in for that. Got a kind of a bittersweet story to share with you later in the week as well. We'll talk about that on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam & Company. Again, don't forget to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, even beyond the Hunter Biden trial, because, yes, there is some other stuff going on regarding your right to keep and bear arms. If you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get 50% off your membership. You'll get exclusive content, an ad-free experience, the ability to comment on stories, and more. But you'll also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And with big tech censorship and anti-gun media bias just inherent, the job has become tougher than ever. We really do appreciate your support. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.